I had that vision of what a runner looked like, you know, the tall, the skinny, you know, in shorts and a vest in -6 degrees, that type of runner. And there were some of those. Mm-hmm. But as I scanned the room, there was this kind of group in the corner of people that looked like me. And I thought, I'm going to go and join them. They were the Couch to 5K group. But what I didn't really realise, and timing has never been my strong point, is that they were doing the 5K that night.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So in at the deep end. But I managed to run and walk 5K that night. And I know it sounds cheesy, but it changed my life. It really did.
Welcome to The Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. So it is the start of a new year and I really wanted to kick off the year with an episode which would hopefully inspire, encourage and motivate us all. So today's guest has taken on a most incredible challenge and is taking on another one this year. He completed 401 marathons in 401 days and his next challenge is to run a marathon in each state in America and he'll be cycling from each one to the next. But he hasn't always been a runner and his story is truly incredible. Welcome to the studio, Ben Smith.
Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh. I mean, like, that bio doesn't even do it justice. I mean, the fact that you've done 401 marathons ever in even in your life would be an incredible achievement, let alone doing them every single day. And I know that there were so many challenges, you know, throughout that time and also, you know, before then. So yeah, I'm just so excited to have you here and to share your story with the listeners.
Yeah, thanks. It sounds nuts when you read it out like that, doesn't it?
Really, really does. I mean, 401 marathons is over 10,000 miles. I mean, I don't need to tell you that. And your challenge raised over £330,000 for charity. And so going into the challenge and throughout, I know, as I said, there were some injuries, some really, really tough days. So I guess, yeah, can you talk to us about how you even started to get your head around the idea, where the idea came from? And then I guess we need to talk about how you actually got through it.
Yeah, well, contrary to popular belief, you don't just wake up one morning and go, do you know what? I know, let's go run a marathon every day for 401 days. That doesn't happen. So putting the listeners' minds at rest, that is not how this happened. It was kind of more of an organic kind of process, really, for me. As you alluded to, I wasn't always a runner. In fact, actually, at the age of 29, I was 17 and a half stone, 40-a-day smoker.
Wow.
Drank myself under the table every single day because I was quite depressed. In a job I didn't really want to be in a relationship I should definitely not have been in. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I was kind of living my life based on what other people wanted from me rather than what I wanted from myself. But I didn't really know that. And unfortunately, all of this stress and all of this anxiety, it manifested itself, unfortunately, in a stroke. So I ended up in hospital having lost my sight and my hearing and my speech and the feeling in my left arm. I was very lucky. A lot of, you know, that went away and it was thankfully downgraded to a TIA, a transient ischemic attack. But, you know, a couple of weeks later, sat in a recovery unit surrounded by people which, you know, let's be honest, tick the box of what you think somebody that has a stroke should look like. And I just remember sitting there thinking, I don't belong here. And I suppose that was that moment in my life where I just went, I need to change, but I have got no clue how to do it, because how can you uncondition the way you've been thinking for the past 20 years? You can't do it overnight, but yet you expect to. Mm. So you become impatient, angry, frustrated, all of that type of stuff. And it took me about a year. I changed a few things in my life. But let's just say I didn't get healthier, I didn't get fitter, you know, I didn't stop drinking, I didn't stop smoking. Normal life just kind of got back in the way. And it took a friend of mine about a year later to kind of pull me up in a pub in Bristol over a pint of cider. And she just said, what are you doing with your life? And after about 45 minutes of berating me you know, like your friends do, wow, and the ones you can, you know, rely on do. She just turned around and said, come on, what are you doing? And I said, well, what do you expect me to do? And she said, well, I'm glad you asked. Why didn't you come and join a running club?
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. I mean, hearing that story, you know, 29 years old and experiencing that must have been terrifying, but also just, you don't expect that, right? You
no.
don't expect it. We all think that, you know, regardless, even if you were overweight, even if you were drinking, smoking, at that age, I think people think you can do whatever you want. It's like you're young. And as you said, when you're, I don't know, 50, 60, that's when you expect to see people having a stroke.
Yeah.
Not at that time. So I guess, yeah, how did you, even getting your head around what had happened to you, did that make you, well, like you said, you didn't stop smoking, you didn't stop drinking, so it didn't make you afraid, it didn't make you fearful.
No, it didn't. And I suppose the way I saw it was a changing moment in my life. I didn't really know how to deal with it when it happened to me. I kind of almost in a way shrugged it off a little bit. But I think the reasons behind how it manifested throughout my life, kind of going right back to the early days, you know, I went away to school when I was 10 years old. My parents were both in the military. And I ended up in private school here in the UK while they were based abroad. And unfortunately, I suffered at the hands of bullies. And I think this was the start of, you know, this whole kind of 20 years of pretending to be something I wasn't, having to kind of fulfill other people's needs rather than my own. And it affected my confidence and my self-esteem. The bullying was based around my sexuality. I found out at 13 that I was gay, but was told that was wrong. And was told that actually, if I wanted to be successful in life, I had to cover that up and I couldn't be who I was. And I think that that level of stress inside, trying to pretend to be something that you're not, you know, we're all victim of that sometimes. And it's exhausting. But the more and more you do it, the more and more you normalise that level of stress inside. And, you know, in a way, it's almost like this pressure cooker kind of experience. It's like a ticking time bomb with, you know, I'm full of clichés today, sorry. But, you know, that just built over 20 years. I followed the societal path that, you know, I was told to follow. I came out of school with some A-levels, not in a great mental state. Ended up at uni doing a psychology degree. I'm sure the irony's not lost on many of the listeners. And, you know, I ended up then going into a corporate career. And, you know, I thought, you know, success is about ticking all these boxes, you know, getting the nice house, getting married, having a family, you know, a nice car, a great job, a mortgage, all of this type of stuff. So I thought, well, I want to be successful because that's going to make me happy. So I literally set about trying to achieve all that. And that took me to 29. And on this 20-year roller coaster that I had, I thought on paper I was. And then suddenly to be faced with this TIA, it was almost a bit like, actually, everything you've been doing is wrong. What are you going to do to change it? And that was terrifying.
It is terrifying, but also, I guess, in some ways, and I hope you don't, you know, mind me saying, it's like a blessing and a curse.
Definitely.
Because it opened your eyes. And I think, you know, what you're describing, so many people probably can relate to the steps and the process of, like, do these things to succeed. This is what society tells us all to, you should want these things, you should try to achieve these things. And if you don't, you won't be happy or you won't be fulfilled. And it's into that kind of, you know, and living a very capitalist, like, you know, like you said, get the car, get the house, buy the things, go on the holidays. It's all a system. And actually, when you have something like that that wakes you up and pulls you out of the matrix almost, it like snaps you into looking at like, what do I actually want? Who am I? Why am I doing the things I'm doing? And it sounds as though you're almost putting happiness aside to pursue success in the hope that that's going to bring you happiness.
Definitely. And but like you just said, they're kind of in your head, you work it so that you think they're quite intrinsically linked. You almost kid yourself that actually this is the way it should be done because that's what other people are telling me. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was quite content. I really was. And I thought I was happy. I really did. You know, I had everything on paper. You know, I ticked every box. I got married, you know, to a woman. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it wasn't right for me. Mm. You know, this is how far I went down the whole line. And yeah, you know what you just said there, it's a blessing in disguise. I completely agree with you. It was both the worst time of my life, but also probably the best.
Wow. So fast forward to when your friend has encouraged you / forced you to join the run club. And Yeah, so you go along for the first time. Any expectation? Had you been? Were you into sports before at all at school? No.
That was probably a big fat no.
Yeah. Okay.
To be honest with you, my experience of sport at school, which actually drives a lot of the work that I actually do now, was very much a negative experience around sport. Back when I was at school, you know, we're talking in the 90s here. It was very much skill based, and if you weren't skilled at the mainstream sports. You weren't good at them, you therefore were classified as not being sporty. Yeah. So therefore you weren't really introduced or fast-tracked into other areas. There was not the kind of level of sports that are out there right now. So I quickly kind of, you know, moved away from sport. You know, I swam and did a few bits and pieces, but it wasn't really my most favourite thing to do in the world. And I had that stereotypical dictatorial PE teacher as well, you know, that terrified me. But, you know, sitting with this friend in the pub, and, you know, saying to her, well, her saying to me, what are you going to do about it? And then her introducing me to this running club. I remember rocking up on the first day. And I'm not going to lie, you know, there was 17 and a half stone in me. I went in baggy tracksuit bottoms and a baggy tracksuit top. I had my hood up, you know, because I thought if any of my mates see me, I could just stop and walk and it would be like I was going down the shop for milk. It was almost like I was putting all these barriers in front of me. But I stood at the front door of this club, which was a pub, by the way. We started and ended at a pub. And I just remember thinking to myself, I'm going to get left behind. They're going to laugh at me. I'm not going to fit in. Had all this kind of negative emotion around it, which, you know, having spoken to thousands upon thousands of runners in what I've done and since what I've done, you know, the feeling has been there for many of those as well. But then somebody opened the door and said, are you coming in? And I don't think my brain and my feet were talking to each other because my foot just took one step forward and I was in. I paid my 50p and I remember turning round and just seeing this sea of green runners. And I had that vision of what a runner looked like, you know, the tall, the skinny, you know, in shorts and a vest in -6 degrees, that type of runner. And there were some of those. Mm-hmm. But as I scanned the room, there was this kind of group in the corner of people that looked like me. And I thought, I'm going to go and join them. They were the Couch to 5K group. But what I didn't really realise, and timing has never been my strong point, is that they were doing the 5K that night.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So in at the deep end. But I managed to run and walk 5K that night. And I know it sounds cheesy, but it changed my life. It really did.
Yeah, no, I can imagine it did. And actually, for someone, you know, I'm a runner, I've got lots of runner friends. And when I talk to people who aren't runners or have never been involved in the running community, it's so hard to make them understand and to believe me, because I think it's not like anything else in the fitness industry.
No.
I think other things that are far more aesthetic, far more competitive, and people assume and they put running in that category. But I always say to people, the running communities are the most inclusive, encouraging. Mm. You're all there for a reason. Everyone's got a reason to run. Yeah. Everyone's got their story and everyone just wants you to succeed. You know, it's like, oh, come on, you can do it, mate. You know, five more minutes or 1 more K, or, you know, no one gets left behind.
No.
And no one's ever made to feel like, oh, what are you doing here? I don't know anyone who's ever had a bad experience in that sense, because the running community, I believe, is just so welcoming. And as you said, there's not one kind of runner. There's everyone. Just look at, I always say, when you stand and watch a race, you will see all ages, all sizes, all colours, all genders, all abilities. And that is what I love so much about being in the community and doing races. So you did the 5K. Obviously, you got the bug. You thought, you know, you weren't running marathons then. But I want to know, how long did it take from that point to getting to, I mean, what you've done now is insane, but to getting to the point of thinking, I can actually take on this insane challenge?
Well, contrary to popular belief, again, I didn't fall in love with it straight away. You know, I achieved that 5K and I remember getting back to the pub and everything from my ankles to my knees to my hips, even the rolls of fat around me hurt. But for the first time in 20 years, I actually felt something, and it was pain. And, you know, it might be sadistic to some people, but because I felt something, that's what then took me back the next time. Not the love for it. That came later. And I think, you know, there was still the nervousness on the second week and the third week and the fourth week, and probably more, you know, even now, there's a slight nervousness. Of course there is. But I remember after 6 months of going twice a week, I signed up to my first half marathon, which was the Bristol Half Marathon. I remember running that, and, you know, I live in Bristol and it's a beautiful city. I didn't enjoy the half, not because the race is bad, but it was too fast for me. And I remember getting to the finishing line and thinking, I'm never running in my life ever again. I went back to club on the Tuesday night after that and told a mate of mine that, and he went, well, this is ironic considering you're at a running club. And then he kind of started to talk to me about, well, if you don't like half marathons, well, why don't you try running a marathon?
Because that'll be better.
Well, this is what I thought at the time. And I thought there's no logic in that. But this is what I didn't understand at the time. And I'm sure you do here, and many of your listeners probably, is this almost logical illogicness that runners have. We have this ability to think what we're doing is absolutely normal. But to somebody that doesn't necessarily run, they think, what? Yeah. You do what?
Yeah.
So anyway, after he took me through the fact that I could, you know, slow down, you could have a chat, you know, it's better crack at the back, and, you know, the training was okay and you could eat more and all of this, I kind of went, yeah, sign me up. And that took me to Brighton in 2013. And, yeah, nearly killed me. Best marathon that I've ever done. To this day, still, Brighton Marathon in 2013. And because it was my first, a huge affiliation to it. But I remember crossing that finishing line and throwing myself over the finishing line, being put in the finishing funnel, not really knowing who I was or what I was at that point, and then somebody giving me a medal. And I just remember thinking to myself, that's something I've achieved. Nobody can take that away from me. And I think that was the moment that I think my bug for marathon running started.
Amazing. Mm. So then you thought, let me do it again and again and again and again and again.
Well, not at this point, no. I signed up to my second marathon, which I took me abroad to Amsterdam, flat as pancake, brilliant, loved it. Had a great weekend, went out with friends. You know, it was that almost sociability of running that I really enjoyed. And going back to what you said before, there's that no judgment.
Yeah.
Nobody cares how much you earn. Nobody cares what you do for a living. If you actually talk about that in your while you're out running, you're kind of, it's almost frowned upon, really.
Yeah.
You're kind of all sweating in the same way. And that's kind of what I started to enjoy about the fact that I was meeting people, I was meeting friends. I was almost like my barriers were coming down. My confidence, my self-esteem was growing. And then in 2014, I decided that I was going to take the next leap. The 401 was not on the horizon at this point. I just said, look, I want to marry two things that I love, which is travel and running. And I thought, well, how do I do that? And, well, the answer came in the fact that, you know, I could travel the world and run marathons around it. And I thought, oh, this sounds pretty cool. So I'd work all day, Monday to Friday, and then I'd fly out from Bristol Airport to some far-flung city somewhere in Europe or, you know, take a bit longer if I was flying further afield. And I ran marathons all around Europe, you know, Reykjavik, Helsinki, Stockholm, Copenhagen. I went to Madrid, Barcelona. I went to over to Miami. Did the San Francisco Marathon.
Nice.
You know, and I suppose throughout this entire journey of running 18 marathons in 2014, I got to the point where actually I felt ready to be able to talk about what had happened to me in the past. You know, you hear a lot of people say nowadays, you know, talk about your mental health issues, talk about issues that you have. And actually to some people, do you know, well, that's really terrifying. Mm-hmm. And it's a really big leap to ask somebody to talk about their innermost demons. And for me, I needed something that kind of went before that. And that was what running was. And it gave me the confidence. It gave me the ability to actually go, do you know what? I'm okay to talk about this. And I went to see somebody. I spoke about it. And it was the last session when I came out. I walked out that door and I said, do you know what? I'm going to use what happened to me in my past to affect not just my future, but also hopefully the futures of thousands of other people. And this is then where the inner workings of the 401 started to come about.
Wow. Well, it's incredibly admirable. And I think, you know, I definitely want to get into this 401 because, you know, as someone who's training now for a marathon, I'm training for one marathon. And when you just described, you know, the finish line and you feel like, oh, finally, it's not just that race for me that's over. It's like, oh, the months of, you know, the 5 a.m. starts, the cold, the, you know, the kind of all of it, you know, you build up to that. So I don't know how I would feel about, even people say to me, Adrienne, are you ever going to do an ultra? And I'm like, no. So I think the fact that, you know, to wake up and do that again and again, how did you, so yeah, you got the idea for it. How did you work with a team? Did you just pick that number out of air? Like, how did you even come up with that?
Yeah, well, 401 is a bit of an odd number, isn't it? You know, so I think
it's a lot. It's a big number.
Yeah, it's a big number. And yeah, trust me, I don't shy away from that fact.
101 would have been better.
Yeah, probably. I think for me, it was a combination of a number of different things. When I came out of that final appointment with the counsellor, and you know, sat in the pub again. There's a big theme to my running, by the way. you know, I started to talk to my friends, and I, you know, we were talking about what potentially I could do to raise some money. We picked the fact that I wanted to raise some money for two anti-bullying charities because that, you know, that had affected my life, the entirety of my life, and I didn't want kids to have to go through what I went through at school, be that from a sexuality reason or other reasons of why people get bullied. So I picked two charities, Kidscape and Stonewall, and then, you know, we were kind of batting about, well, how much do we want to raise? And I thought, well, you know, a million's probably quite a lot, isn't it? And then somebody went, well, you know, why not 100,000? I was like, well, you know, let's go for a quarter of a million. And literally that was how it came.
Yeah.
And then suddenly realised that actually, you know, to raise a quarter of £1 million, you kind of got to do something big. You kind of got to do something out the box because, you know, everyone's running marathons nowadays. Everyone's running ultras nowadays. And, you know, it's stopped being that thing of like, oh, yeah, this is amazing, even though it is. Mm. And it's an incredible achievement for anyone that does it. But people expect more.
Yep.
So we thought, right, well, OK, well, what's the biggest thing we can do in marathon running, in running? And I was never going to be the quickest marathon runner. That was never going to happen. I don't run for those reasons. I was never going to be the biggest ultra marathon runner. You know, that didn't, a bit like yourself, it didn't really kind of, you know, get my juices flowing, so to speak. But somebody said to me, well, why do you like running marathons? I'd done probably around about 25 at this point. And they said, well, why don't you do back to back? And weirdly enough, I thought that was saner than actually ultra running. But I thought, do you know what? That actually sounds quite a good idea. And then we kind of thought, well, what's the biggest thing you can do in that? And it was the world record.
Oh,
and
okay.
I thought, okay, well, what's the world record? And supposedly it's 53. It was a Japanese guy, I believe, okay, that ran 106 times around a running track for 53 days in a row. And I just thought, yeah, I don't think I want to do that. I thought even the mental strength of just being going around a track every single day. And we actually, you know, went to Guinness and said, look, if we were going to go for this, you know, what are the rules and regulations? And they sent us this big list. And I suppose as I was reading down this list, I just kind of thought to myself, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel the reasons as to why I want to do this. So in a way, what we did was we kind of just went, well, look, we'll forget about the world record, but let's go beat it anyway.
Amazing.
And it turns out there are other people in the world that have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there was an Australian couple that ran a number of, you know, just I think it's over 100 that they ran around the coast of Australia in their 70s, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you have a couple of American guys, an English dude. And, you know, there was all the way up to 365. There was a claim of a 607 and 1,000. You know, we found that there was a guy that had done 1,000, a monk for Zen, supposedly. But the ones that we could kind of corroborate were the 365.
Okay.
So I thought, well, let's round it up to 400.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I went to the US and I ran 7 marathons in 7 days across 7 states of the US, from St. Louis down to New Orleans, down the Mississippi, which was an incredible experience. And I got to run with this amazing guy called Larry Macon, who I believe is the world record holder for the most amount of marathons that have ever been run in a lifetime.
Wow.
I think it's around 1,800 at the moment that he's at. But he's a lanky Texan dude, and he's got the biggest and the most amazing personality. And he said, look, I love what you're doing. Have you thought of a victory lap? And I went, what do you mean? You know, my British sensibility kind of went, what?
Victory lap, yeah. One more mile, not one more marathon.
Well, you know, I kind of thought long and hard about it. And I suppose in a way, the way we thought about that victory lap was that it would allow, you know, people to come and join us for the last one. So we flew back to the UK, and in April of 2015, that's when it became the 401 Challenge.
Amazing. Okay, I really wanted to know that story because I just thought, how did they even come up with this insane challenge, let alone thinking that it's possible? Because honestly, like, I think I'm somebody, you know, I talk a lot about mindset. I talk a lot about, you know, self-improvement, self-development, kind of focusing on your ability and kind of, yeah, I guess running is something that's very measurable. You know, you can always run a little further, run a little faster. You can track your progress, which I love. But personally, I don't know if my mind would allow me to think that I could do it. That is what would hold me back. That's probably what holds me back from ultras, is thinking, what if you actually can't do it? What if you say, okay, I'm going to do 401 marathons, you get all these sponsors, you've got maybe some press involved, I don't know any brands, like you've got this expectation, you've got people, you know, helping you with the training, supporting, and then you get there, you start. What about if 100 marathons in, you're done, like physically, mentally. What if you can't carry on? What do you do then? So yeah, I mean, let's skip to that. So you've started doing the marathon every day, which is must be insane. You've trained for how you even trained for that, I don't know. So yeah, let's go say halfway through 200 marathons, 200 days. How are you feeling at that point, physically, mentally? Were you thinking, I'm not going to be able to finish this?
At 200, I was actually feeling quite good. Okay. I was in Glasgow, up a hill just past a fire station. We had party poppers at the halfway point. It was pretty cool at that point. I think that the hardest bit for me was actually the first 50 days.
Okay, so talk to us about that.
Yeah, it was the first 50 days because that's where your body's starting to kind of adapt to what you're asking it to do. And it's almost, it's that physicalness of the actual challenge to begin with, I found. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone's different. You know, everyone runs for different reasons. Everyone has different motivations and things that they do in life. And I think what I did was I attached different motivations to my running every single day. So I didn't have the same motivation, say, on day one as what I might have had on day 200 or day 250 or day 401. You know, there was a consistent reason as to why I was doing what I was doing, and there were objectives of the challenge. But, you know, there were certain days where, you know, I did wake up and I went, you know, my legs feel like lead. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it slow today. And trust me, again, contrary to popular belief, I wasn't running these at sub 3 hours. You know, I was running on average at 5:21 a day. And I was having to eat 6,500 calories a day. So I was having to stop and eat halfway through. So I was able to chunk it down into almost manageable pieces, which then allowed for other people to be able to come and join in as well.
But in that way, again, though, some would argue that makes it harder because essentially running the distance is the distance. But if you're running for 3 hours or 5 hours, essentially you're on your feet for longer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So people, yeah, I do.
You 5.5 hours of running every single day, can imagine, took such a toll physically on your body.
It did take a toll on my body. But I think, going back to the kind of first 50 days, you know, I had all the kind of niggles and issues and stuff like that for the first 50 days. I lost 17 kilos in weight, which started to affect me mentally because I suppose, you know, I didn't have any sponsors. I didn't have any, experience, dare I say. I wasn't a trained athlete. I was kind of doing this really off my own back. The team around me were a small team, which included my dad, who had come out of retirement from the military and was planning the logistics of the project in Mum's dining room, you know, in Lincoln. Mum was looking after the therapy side of things because that's her background. My other half, Kyle, who I'd met about 9 months prior to the challenge, who doesn't like running, by the way, he hates it. He'd given up his PhD and given up his job to come on board and project manage. And we had another girl called Tolu, who was helping us out as well. And this was the team. What we wanted to do was get as many people involved in the project as possible, which actually was a huge motivation for me. Going back to what drove me into running was the sociability angle. Mm. I knew that running on my own was never going to be an option because I would not have been able to stay motivated in my mind.
It's lonely, too.
Yeah, completely. So what we said was from the very beginning that this project was open to everybody. So if you did want to come and join in, I would always run at the pace of the slowest runner, which to some people is a bit like, well, how can you chop and change your, you know, your patterns and how you run? You know, if you're running a bit slower than what you would normally run, that could cause injury. I think what I put into my running was the element of fun. And I kind of almost rid myself of all of the misconceptions and all of the, dare I say, brand and marketing ideas of the running community. And I just went, do you know what? I'm just going to go run a marathon every day. And I didn't make it any bigger than that in my head. And all I did was surround myself by people that believed in me. I got rid of all of those people in my life that told me I couldn't do it.
Amen.
And then basically, you know, on the days where it was bad, it was bad. I'm not going to lie. Just shortly after the 200 mark, around 2:85, I'd just done the Edinburgh Marathon back end of May in 2016. I think it was, 2016. And I was working my way up to Aberdeen. Unfortunately, my back kind of went in Dundee. And then over the next 4 days through kind of Arbroath, Montrose, Stonehaven and into Aberdeen, I kind of almost ended up in a bit of a question mark shape, which was not great. Mm. And I ended up having to go to Aberdeen Royal Infirmary. And I was told by one of the doctors there that I needed to stop. And, this was 2:85 in. I obviously started to negotiate with the doctor because it was like they didn't know what they were talking about. I've got a goal here. Can I just get to John O'Groats? It's 300 at that point. I'm loving the rounded numbers, by the way. Well, let's just say they said no. And my team, I'd signed a contract with my team that said if anything like this ever happened, that they would just pull me off the road and it would be their decision, not mine, because I was too emotionally involved in the project. My dad and my other half pulled me off the road, and over 10 days we found out that I had actually got a fracture in the bottom of my back, and one of my discs had ruptured, which was impinging on my spinal cord, and it was sending sciatic pains down my legs. And unfortunately what that had done was my core had tightened up so much that it had twisted my spine into a corkscrew. Oof. And I was in so much pain and so much agony. But over the next 10 days, I worked with a physio, a chiropractor, you know, a number of different amazing people. And we ended up back on the road in Inverness.
With the broken back?
Yeah, 10 days later. Then, unfortunately, we decided that instead of running marathons, we would run ultra marathons.
You had to make up the miles.
Yeah. So I still wanted to finish on the same day. I still wanted to achieve the goal. And actually, this is, I think, where the British public just kind of got behind it.
Yes, I love this
honestly,
already, because it's like the comeback.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, let's be honest, people
love
a sad story.
We love an underdog. It's like, not only are you going to run 400 marathons, but now you're going to have a broken back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, though, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm kind of, like, I'm smiling because I'm cheering you on and I know it's a happy ending, but I'm also terrified. If I was your partner, dad, mum, I would have been like, you need to stop this madness, because essentially you have one body, you've got to look after it. You know, it's scary for them to kind of watch you, but I understand the kind of the will and the desire. Yeah. Actually, I listened to something recently that was talking about physical challenges and how, you know, the science can only do so much when it comes to, you know, looking at your blood sugar, your pressure, your all these things that tell you how far you should be able to run. But it was saying that actually will you can never measure.
No.
And if someone has a will to do something that is, you know, they're not going to stop, because let's be honest, you could have definitely used that as a get out card, and no one would have said, oh, you know, he gave up. Like, that could have been your moment to go, yes, thank God it's over. Mm. I'm injured, I'm out. But you had the will and you carried on.
I think, you know, we're very good as human beings in putting things in place to block ourselves from doing things. You know, I tried to make this challenge limitless. I really did, both in my mind and my body. And yeah, okay, my body gave up. Of course it did. But, you know, I was able to work with incredible people to be able to get my body back on track. You know, running with a damaged back, you know, through the Highlands of Scotland isn't necessarily the best thing to do. You know, when Ben Nevis starts, you know, when that ends up being the second half of your ultra marathon, you know, you've got a bit of a problem. But as I said, the support that people gave over those last 117 days, and obviously before, you know, people got behind this to the point where on the final day in Bristol, you know, 700 plus people came out and ran. We had 2,500 people around the world running it virtually, including 5 in Sydney, which, you know, mentioned 10,500 miles at the beginning. That's the equivalent distance from London to Sydney.
Wow.
So we had 5 in Sydney running at the same time over there that we were running here in the UK. It was emotional. I think nothing else obviously in the country was happening on that day, just this crazy bearded guy running around Bristol for his 401st marathon. So the world's media was there, which was amazing. And it was that final day that the only thing that we hadn't raised was the money. We'd achieved the 401. We were actually 12 miles over. You know, we'd inspired, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, we including talks in 101 schools up and down the country to kids to show them that actually don't put limits in your life. You can do anything that you want to do. The only thing we hadn't hit was the money. But halfway round, with the help of the British media and the support of all the people that supported us, we found the final £90,000 that took us over the £250,000 mark. And I'm not ashamed to say, but I cried live. I cried live on Sky News. But it was, funnily enough, again, at the pub, which is right next to where I live right now. And that final half a marathon back into Bristol was just me running on trails that I learned to run on with people that, yeah, just cared about what it was we were doing. It was magical. It's
honestly, I've got goosebumps, and I think it is emotional running. I think it's so emotional. And, you know, I've seen, you know, videos of you on the news that day. I know people referred to you as Forrest Gump, and, you know, you were looking like with a big beard and a bit sunburnt on your shoulders. But it is emotional, and you think, you know, obviously the people there supporting you. I mean, I'm so glad that, you know, you went over the target, you went way over the target with the money. And wow, I just think, what an achievement. And I know you've actually, you know, you've written the 401 book, which is now available. But, you know, I think a lot of people would probably go, okay, I've done it. I have done that. I am going to dine out on this for the rest of my life. Hang up those trainers. You will never see me running again. I'm going to rest my back and just, you know, basically talk for the rest of my life about the fact that you can do anything. And I'm proof of it because I ran 401 marathons in as many days. The end.
No, it's just the beginning.
The end. Stop. Close the book. No.
This is kind of just the beginning. It was almost like a chapter in my life had kind of closed at that point. And then it was like, well, okay, let's consolidate. Let's take a step back. Let's recover. You know, because obviously, you know, 10,500 miles, it takes its toll on your body. I had my back to sort out. I had the mental side of things to sort out as well.
Did you suffer a little bit from not having that
structure?
Because people talk about, you know, the running blues after the marathon. Yeah. It's like, what do I focus on now? But I can't even imagine.
Yeah, no, hugely. You know, my other half jokes, he said, oh, I thought I'd get the old Ben back, but actually got a new Ben back, which was more of a miserable, kind of depressed, kind of, you know, didn't want to get out of bed type Ben. And I think there was the chemical imbalance in my body because I'd been burning adrenaline for 401 days. Talking and chatting to people and, you know, driving the project as much as I could from ground level, which was obviously very successful. But I'd given everything that I could to this project, everything. And basically, it affected me hugely. I didn't sleep for 3 months.
Insomnia.
I ended up on antidepressants, which was, you know, I didn't feel judged or anything by it. It was, you know, the NHS, the doctors that supported me were absolutely incredible with regard to the support for me that they gave. And over a period of around 9 months, I kind of pulled myself back to kind of almost a Ben that I could recognise. But what this had done was it has inspired me to kind of create a legacy to what we'd done. You know, we changed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. We'd raised all this money, we'd done this amazing task, and actually I didn't want to jump straight back into another challenge. Didn't want to do that. That wasn't what motivated me. What I wanted to do was create a long-lasting legacy, which then came in the form of the Mental Health Foundation that we now run, called the 401 Foundation. And we set that up, which was amazing. It was so tough. You know, I've never been a CEO of a charity before. You know, I've never worked for a charity before. But to kind of run a charity and build it from ground up with some incredible people who are supporting us on our board and, you know, for the support from the 401 family, as we call them now, it's been an adventure. And, you know, the foundation is incredibly successful at the moment. We're getting to the points where we're going to be handing out grants in the next couple of months to small community projects around the UK that build confidence and self-esteem, but also tackle issues around mental health and self-development. I'm doing a lot of work with schools and young kids to try and inspire them to say, do you know what? Don't put some barriers in place. You can do what you want to do. And then this then inspired the fact that actually we needed to raise some big bucks for this charity. And I turned around to my other half. And I said to him, do you mind if I go do another one? And he just looked at me and went, if you go do another one, we get married.
Yes.
And I went, okay. Now you think that was romantic, right?
Yeah.
It's more down to the insurance. I'm not going to lie. If you know the guy, it's down to the insurance.
It.
But yeah, I'm happy to say that, you know, we were married 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Which is epic. And obviously he's given me the permission to go off and do my next one, which starts in July next year.
Oh my gosh.
Brill.
I am beaming. I love it. I love love. This is great. So congratulations.
Thanks.
On your newlywed husband. But also, I mean, there's no stopping you. So this year, tell us.
Yeah, so this
America.
Year, yeah, in July, actually, yeah. This year, so warmer months. It was due to be in March that we were starting. It's called the USA 2020 Challenge, but we shifted it to July because we spoke to the American Weather Service and they said you might not want to run around the northern states of America in March and April because it can be a bit snowy and a bit cold. So we switched it to July to October, but I'm going to be going to the states. And as you said in the very beginning of the podcast, I'm going to be running a marathon in every one of the state capitals, starting starting in Maine on the 1st of July, and then over the next 104 days, moving from, I suppose, the northeast of the country down to Florida and then up and down the US to finish on the 12th of October in Hawaii. But rather than obviously drive and fly between the locations, we thought we'd add another discipline, which is cycling.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? You know,
limitless,
you know, spin them out, you know. But yeah, what we want to do is we want to raise £1 million this time around, so four times the amount that we raised last. But this time it's in aid of both our foundation and also the Youth Sport Trust, which is one of the other charities that I'm actually a mental wellbeing ambassador for. And this takes me back to my experiences of sport at school. I'm obviously aware your husband's a PE teacher.
He is indeed.
I'm a huge believer in the power of sport. I really am. You know, I don't want to preach to people, but, you know, sport does have such a huge positive effect on a young person and an older person's confidence and self-esteem. I'm literally the proof of that. And what I want to be able to show kids is that actually being physically active will have a positive effect on their mental well-being. So as part of this next project, not just the physicalness and the mentalness of what we're doing, we've actually built an educational program which we're going to be implanting into 4,001 schools as of next year. It's free resources for mental well-being, and they're going to be linked into the USA 2020 challenge. And yeah, hopefully we can have 1 million children inspired and come along on the journey with us, which will be absolutely epic.
So exciting. And just such an amazing, amazing cause. And I truly believe as well that, yes, sport can change lives. I've witnessed it. I've witnessed it myself. And yeah, the power and the impact it can have on young people to be involved in sport, to not have that negative feeling that, you know, oh, I'm not sporty, or that sport is this, you know, embarrassing, awful, you know, competitive environment, when actually, you know, sport can just open doors for so many people. And especially, I think, people who need it the most, you know, people who maybe don't access school in the same way, or don't have the confidence, or maybe have, you know, behavioural issues or learning disabilities, or whatever the challenge is. I truly believe that sport can, like, it's like a levels the playing field. As you said, we're all there. You're all, you know, doing it together, and it's amazing. So, I mean, I wish you all the best on that challenge. And what I want to know, you said before, you know, this is for everyone to get involved. Yeah. You know, I love to run, and you know, I love to travel. So I want to know, where these hot sunny destinations, because I'm not so much about the cold places either, where I can come and join you for one of these races?
Well, in February, March and April this year, we're going to be launching the routes to our next project. We spent a good 9 months to almost a year trying to plan these, because you can probably imagine the logistical aspects of this entire project, not just with the time zones, but the weather and the terrain and the roads that you can cycle on, the rules and regulations of each different state, and then the counties within them. It's an absolute minefield.
The running's the easy bit.
Yeah, do you know what? The challenge is actually going to be the easiest bit. But we've nailed all of that now, which is great. So in February, March and April, we'll start announcing all the different stages. We've got 10 stages, each five states long. As I said, we start in Maine. We work our way down kind of the eastern seaboard to Tallahassee in Florida, and then all the way back up into Michigan and et cetera, et cetera. So people will be able to come and join in. We were challenged as to how we could make an impact in the US, because obviously, you know, it's important to realise that the charities are British-based charities and we're raising money for those. But we've actually been looking at how we can make an impact in the US. We've got some people going to be flying over who ran with me last time that are taking holidays and going to come and do marathons with me in the US. And some people are going to come and do some bike trips with me in the US, which will be really cool. But we want the American public to get involved in this too. So each of the marathons are actually going to be run round running tracks in educational establishments or the state capital universities. So we're in the throes of contacting those at the moment. We're working with each of the US city mayors at the minute to kind of get the events built. And I'll be running around a track, which will allow me to run at a particular pace, because obviously time is of an essence this time round, which it wasn't last. But it means that people, you know, of all different ages and abilities can kind of come out and run with me on the track, whether or not that's for a couple of laps or, you know, the whole thing, or if they want to do it at a slower pace. It just means that the involvement and inclusion is there. And going back to the point you said there about sport being accessible to all, that's what we want to show. But then the challenge was with the cycling. How do we do that? It's a point to point every day, sometimes 120 miles on a bike. So what we've done is we've split that into four or five sections each day so people can come and do a shorter section with me and then turn back and go. So yeah, not only will it motivate me being surrounded by people, which will keep my mindset positive from what I learned in the last time, it'll also make sure that this project doesn't just inspire a million people here in the UK, it goes global.
Wow. Wow. I'm so excited and inspired myself. I feel like, come on, Adrienne, you need to up your game.
I believe Hawaii needs to be the one on the 12th of October.
I mean, I'm down.
Are you down?
Hawaii.
Happy days.
I mean, that's all you need to say to me. Hawaii. I mean, sounds great. 12th of October, I'm free. So I'll see you there. But seriously, like, it is inspiring. And I really hope that, you know, at the start of the year, I think there's a lot of, you know, talk about new me, new year, like start some new, you know, habits, give up this, give up that, give up the other. And it's all about quitting things.
Yes.
When I'm not a quitter, I'm like, don't give up things, take on something new. So actually, maybe this will hopefully inspire people to think, maybe if they thought they could never run a marathon, maybe this is the year that you actually add something to your list, add something to your life. Instead of giving up something, take on something, lace up. Maybe you don't think you can run 5K. Maybe you don't think you can run for 5 minutes. But every single time you do that, you just do the 5 minutes or the first mile or whatever, it gives you, as you said, confidence. It gives you proof. You've proven to yourself, I didn't think I could do that, and I did. So what else can you do that you didn't think you could do? You know?
You're amazing. Preaching to the choir here.
Oh.
Completely.
Yes. I feel so good.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, so, I mean, normally I would talk a lot about the power hour, which is the first hour of my day, and I believe it's really important. And I mean, I wanted to know, like, I guess when you, are you training now? Have you started training? What's the first hour of your day like? I mean, I know you had a juice this morning. Is that a daily practice?
No. I try and keep my day as flexible as I can, to be honest with you. I think what I found is that, you know, a bit different to yourself, I find that if I structure my day in a particular way, that doesn't necessarily work for me. I like to keep it flexible. So obviously I have certain commitments that I have to do each day. I run a company, I run a business, you know, that gives me a level of flexibility to be able to do what I want. But I try and integrate at least a gym session, a run session or a cycle session into one of my days. Obviously, the weather isn't that great at the moment. And, you know, it's always a struggle getting out in the freezing cold. But I think what I try and do is not give myself the pressure. The moment I start going, oh, I don't want to go out, then I know that maybe going out is probably not the right thing for me. I'm not going to be fully motivated to be able to go out and do a good workout. So, you know, I'll jump on the spin bike in the spare room and I'll do some miles on the spin bike, or I'll go to the gym, or I'll eat a healthy dinner. I'll just do something.
Oh, go down to the pub. Well, back to that pub.
That has been known. I think, you know, at the end of the day, exercise is supposed to be fun. And I think what we tend to do to ourselves, and going back to what you said about cutting things out, we look at exercise as a negative thing. It's actually how can you incorporate that into your life in a fun way? And I think that does go all the way back down to when we were younger, giving kids the ability to try a plethora of sports, you know, to instill in them that actually sport isn't a bad thing. They don't have to be the best at it. You know, they just have to be active for it to benefit them, not just physically, but mentally. I think over the next couple of generations, what we'll see is a real turn in the attitude towards exercise and how people incorporate that in their lives. We're just having to catch up as adults now.
Yeah, I really hope so, because, yeah, that hasn't been the narrative for me. You know, I was that kid at school who loved PE. I loved, you know, there were certain lessons and certain areas of the school that I did not love, but that was the place that I loved to be. And I think it was definitely a polarizing thing. People either loved it or hated it. So that's definitely set me up to, you know, enjoy, you know, I did dance, I've done athletics, I do, you know, all different sports. And I think that's, I see it and people kind of go, well, it's fine for you because you are sporty, you know. But as you said, a lot of people that I meet did not have that story, yet now they really, really do have this amazing whole new world of things available to them. So, but that's cool. I think for me, I guess it depends on your personality, because for me, if I had that more relaxed approach that you described, I think things would come up, things would get in the way, and then I'd go, oh, you know what, it's too late, or I'm busy, or I'd just find an excuse. So for me, like getting the morning thing, having the structure, I have to have it, because I know that later on in the day, when work commitments, WhatsApps, my son, emails, other things will take my time.
Yeah.
And I won't have the time. You know?
And I think that's the key. It's finding what works for you. You know, this is why the 401 was a success, because I didn't, you know, and in a way, I suppose I benefited from the fact that I wasn't a trained athlete. I hadn't been through years and years and years of sports training. I literally ran this in the purest way I could. And in a way, that's what I've adapted into my training now. I do it in the purest way I can. For me, I know that the way I do it works for me. It doesn't necessarily work for others. But doing it the way that it does work for you is the key to making sure that you can incorporate exercise into your life in a fun and exciting way.
Awesome. Okay, well, before I ask you my closing question, Ben, which is a new one.
Oh.
Yes, it's a new year.
Oh, I'm
excited. I've got a new question. Before I ask you that, though, could you please tell the listeners where they can, firstly, follow you online, get the book, and follow the project, the challenge?
Right. Okay, alert here, plug coming.
Go for it.
So, yeah, if you want to follow the 401 Challenge, it's pretty simple. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and it's just simply at the 401 Challenge. So you'll get all the regular daily updates from me as to, you know, the crazy stuff that goes on in my life at the moment. And trust me, sometimes it's not pretty, but we share all. If you want to check out what the USA 2020 Challenge is all about, you can visit our website, which is just simply the 401challenge.co.uk. And then if you want to buy the book, you can find that in Waterstones, but also on Amazon, and it's called The 401.
Amazing. Well, yeah, if you type it in, as you said, 401, and even if you type in 401 Ben, it comes up.
Yeah, you might get a couple of pension books from the US, the 401k, but just scroll down.
Yeah, and also you'll see some videos of you, which I watched, which are amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so my closing question, which, as I said, is a new one for this year, is all about time, because it is the Power Hour podcast. I am obsessed with the concept of, you know, making time count and believing that it's the most valuable thing that we can give to another person. So thank you, Ben. And also the most valuable thing that we have, we can't get it back. We can't buy more.
No.
If we could, it would be sold out in every store. So
I like what you did there.
Yeah. Okay, so the closing question is, if you had one extra hour each day, so not one, you know, it's 25 hours in a day, every single day, one extra hour each day, what would you use it to do?
Oh my God. Oh, I think you stumped me. I actually say every single day, I wish I had more time. What would I use it for? Probably planning more of my adventure, to be honest with you. It's where I'm the happiest. You know, don't say that to my other half. Obviously, I'm happy at home with him, obviously.
An extra hour with you, Kyle.
Yeah, I probably should have said that, really, shouldn't I? But no, I think if I'm going to be completely honest, I think it's planning future adventures. I'm the happiest when I'm in front of a spreadsheet, checking the logistics and understanding, you know, what the possibilities for the future are. So, yeah, that's how I'd use my extra hour.
Brilliant.
Can I have another hour?
Well, I mean, we'll see what we can do. But I love the answer. I love the answer. I love planning things. But I think what you're doing is you're planning it, and it's not just a dream or a wish list. It has a deadline. It has a date. And as soon as you apparently add a deadline and a date to a goal, that's when it becomes a mission.
Yeah. And as I said, going back to what you were saying before, you know, we're still in that phase of trying to fund the project at the moment. And that's really scary. You know, the ironic thing is we can raise the £1 million. We've got that sorted. It's just raising the capital now to be able to get to America on the 1st of July. So if anyone's out there that wants to help.
Yep. Come on, funders.
Get involved.
If you've got the cash, get in touch. OK, brilliant. Thank you so much, Ben, for giving us your time today. And thank you, everyone, as always, for listening to the Power Hour podcast. I'm so excited for the year ahead. Please do let us know if you've enjoyed this episode. You can rate and review it on iTunes. And if you haven't already, then please do that, because it really helps to grow the show, to reach more listeners, to spread the message, and to book future guests as well. So if you do enjoy this podcast and you send me tweets and Instagram messages, I appreciate every single one. But please do rate and review on iTunes. Have a fantastic week. Lace up. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.